There's no life here. We've got just 72 hours to find it. That's when the groceries run out. Let's go.
Which direction?
That way.
Any particular reason?
None at all.
Nobody puts baby in a corner. This is Film Zack. Oh, sure.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, the favorite Film Sack of all Film Sacks in the history of Film Sack. My name is Scott Johnson. Joining me for this fine episode of Film Sack is Mr. Brian Ibbett.
Hey, Scott. You know, I am predicting no less than 47 Charlton Heston impersonations in this episode.
Wow.
Outrageous.
That seems probably accurate, given what we're about to deal with. Also joining us, of course, is Mr. Brian Dunaway.
Get your dirty, dang, duty, poo-slinging hands off of me.
Wow.
That's the worst Charlton Heston impression you've ever heard.
I was going to say, dude. Oh. What a little old man with a pitchfork.
That's it. I'm going to get my gun.
You're a freak.
Slim Pickens, wasn't it? Are you doing Charlton Heston?
I don't know what the heck that was. You encouraged me to use the impression, so I had to do something. I didn't have time to prepare.
We started it off with a bang.
Hey, you damn dirty apes, get over here. You apes, yeah. Get up alone.
Also joining us, of course, is the venerable Mr. Randy Jordan, a.k.a. Randy Deluxe. Randy, hello.
Thanks, Scott. You know, I once had a girlfriend who couldn't speak English or any language. She was completely, you know, stupid. And best girlfriend I ever had. It just happens. I also broke up with her the day that I woke up to someone saying they were going to neuter me.
That was it. She was kind of good, hot, though, for her day.
She was totally Selma Hayek.
You think so?
I think she was. She really looked like Selma
Hayek. I think
Hayek.
She was dumber than Selma Hayek.
I know I'm jumping. I know I'm jumping way into this discussion, but there is a moral discussion to be had, right? About just falling into a sexual relationship with someone who is, you know,
with a mute native girl. Yeah.
Hey, if she's in the cage.
She's
it's more or less bestiality, isn't it? I mean,
it is. Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. Well, if you can't figure it out by now what we're talking about, maybe we'll let Scott Fletcher help out the rest of you slow folk.
Planet of the Apes. Charlton Heston stars in one of the 60s most beloved camp classics. Bewildered astronaut George Taylor, played by Heston, crash lands on a strange planet ruled by intelligent apes who use primitive humans for experimentation and sport. Taylor quickly finds himself among the hunted as he struggles to escape the apes' power and uncover their darkest secret.
The apes' power indeed. Brilliant.
That was great. I always enjoy those Scott Fletcher intros.
They're my favorite part of the show.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think we could just run a string of those and be done with it.
Totally.
Yeah, we don't need the rest of this stuff. But thank you again to Scott Fletcher for all he does for the show. So we're talking about Planet of the Apes, the original Planet of the Apes, the 1969 version, 68 version, which came out 1 year before I was born.
Wow.
So that's same here. Pretty old.
Really?
And so are we.
Wow. You guys are old.
Yeah, that's right. Me and Brian Ibbett.
I remember this was my first talkie.
Well, it was filmed in Panavision, and it was filmed in deluxe color. So,
Yes, it was.
It's one of those old movies like back in the day where they would show end credit style credits at the beginning.
The beginning.
Yeah.
And the final credits are like 5 seconds.
This movie's never
going
to start.
I know. I hate it.
And you could think Alfred Hitchcock for switching that up a little bit for us. Thanks, Alfred, for Psycho.
Was he the one?
Did he mix it up? I don't know. I don't remember that enough.
Yeah.
By the way, Scott, I want Brian Dunaway to go first.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
All right. Like I was saying before, yes, it was commonplace for to run the credits before the movie, but people used to come into theaters late because of that very reason. We can't even conceive of doing that now. Not me anyway, especially if you're a movie buff. I always get to the theater like 30 minutes early, you know, get everything ready, set up, you know, got to get the perfect seat, everything.
Yeah, but plus you're paying like $8.50 a ticket too. Why the crap would you?
Yeah. So people used to show up late. So, you know, what if I missed the credits? So, you know, Alfred Hitchcock with Psycho, he started out some stuff there. You know, he's like, hey, let's just jump right into it. And people were getting pissed.
Were they? People were mad? They got there late, fashionably late, and said, what did I miss? And they said,
I'm totally lost now. What's going on? Why is this girl driving? Where is she going?
Wow. I would have liked to have been there with you on that day.
I was there.
Randy, you were saying before, what were you saying?
I just wanted you to say again, what sort of color was this film?
Deluxe. Deluxe color. Color deluxe.
Color.
I'll have you know I get 2.1 cents every time you say that.
Oh, man. That'll go along with all the Charlton Heston impressions. By the way, I have a damn good one if I say so myself. So I'm saving it, though. Yeah. I'm going to save it a little bit later.
Rated G, by the way, this movie.
It was actually originally released as rated M, and there was no formal rating for M because there just wasn't one. And the MPAA only had X as an option, and so they were really concerned about going X. They chopped a bunch of stuff out of it to lessen the blow, like, for example, originally the native human women were supposed to be running around topless all the time.
Dude! So that would be a perfect shot for boobies.
So they traded that in for Heston's bare butt and crotch shot occasionally.
Just on that topic, obviously there's no homophobes in the future because all these guys, as soon as they see a lovely pond, as soon as they see that lovely pond or oasis to jump into, they immediately strip naked, three grown men.
Yeah. And what's about it is the chick that died on the ship that was supposed to be with him, I kept thinking, well, what if she'd have made it? What if she had to hang around with these freaking disgusting, hairy, sweaty, sunburned-faced, ugly men with bad fake beards jumping around in the water naked? I just couldn't imagine her enjoying herself.
Maybe she would have been the one that had the brain, because I want you to know, if the four of us were all dumped into Lake Powell right now, not right now, let's say the four of us were all dumped into Lake Powell at some other time in Earth's history.
Could have been the summer.
Okay, sure, whatever. Like the worst possible time to be dumped into Lake Powell. What's the first thing we would do? We would walk along the edge of the lake. We wouldn't let our drinking water out of our sight.
That was the first thing I told Suzanne. I'm like, where are they going?
Yeah, camp there, dude. Lake Powell's beautiful. Stay there.
Oh, look, a desert. Let's walk straight into it.
Let's walk into the rest of Glen Canyon. Yeah. There's a lot of things like that about this movie that made you realize that people weren't thinking about those things back then, because today I think they would be gaping plot holes that would drive everyone crazy to see some of those things. Now, quickly, I want to mention this. We realize that Planet of the Apes is considered a science fiction classic, and that we're not talking about anything that people haven't seen. It's one of the most quoted, one of the most referenced movies in the history of film. I'm trying today, especially with my clips, to attack it from some slightly different angles. There's all the stereotype stuff that happens with the apes, and we'll get into some of that. But there's a lot that happens before. We don't even see an ape for 31 minutes in this movie.
Yeah.
Well, except for Charlton Heston.
Well, that's true. And by the way, he's kind of we have a clean tag in iTunes, but he's kind of a dick.
Oh, yeah.
You mean the guy who started NARA? Yeah, the NRA.
His character is so strange on the page. Like, there's a scene early on in the film when you know, like, they're walking away from Lake Powell and his comrade plants an American flag in the dirt.
Yeah.
And Charlton Heston's character just laughs maniacally.
He's losing it. I have that clip, in fact. He's just like losing his soul.
Can we hear the scene now? Can we hear the clip?
Yeah, let's play it now. Let me move
that
up.
It's crazy. What the? Is there any explanation for that?
No, there's not. There's
oh my God, he's planting.
Yeah, there's an explanation. He's a cynic. You foolish man, you're so worried about planting the flag. Everything you've known is gone and dust.
But cynics are okay. I just don't like cynics that are such jerks. He was constantly going, you guys are such dumbasses. I don't know why you care about where we've landed.
It's funny that y'all hate it. I actually liked it. And I think I remember hating it when I had watched it before, but I haven't seen this movie in years. Yeah. But this time when I watched it, I kind of liked it.
No, I did too. There are some stuff I noticed early on that the director chose to do that really stood out. And the problem is the last time I saw Planet of the Apes movie was probably about 6 months ago, and I saw Planet of the Apes 2, whatever that one's called, Beneath or whatever it
beneath,
is.
Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Or,
it was Beneath, or there was Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
You know what would be good if we had like some kind of fact or something pulled up on that?
Wikipedia. Yeah, huh. So I actually think that the Charlton Heston basically did a cameo in the second movie, and so did the girl, Linda Harrison, plays Nova. She was in there too. Yeah. And it's terrible. That is a terrible, terrible movie. And this movie, by comparison, really is much, much better. And not only is it better in just story and concept and everything else, it's just a more fun movie. And I think it also holds up better over time. It still has its issues, but director Franklin J. Schaffner, mm-hmm. anyway, did Schaffner. Some things that I felt like were kind of new for the time. For example, mm-hmm. opening credits happen. And during mm-hmm. the opening credits, it's a weird, ethereal, like
that was very good,
like weird credits over like space stuff happening in the background, and it's quiet. It had a kind of a if I could compare it to something new, kind of a Aliens, who directed the first Aliens? My brain just went blank.
Ridley Scott.
Kind of had a Ridley Scott tone to it, and it was much more kind of dark and mysterious, and less of the traditional Hollywood thing at this time, which was, you know, with just lots of loud stuff and deluxe color and everything in your face. And right. I thought that was really interesting. In fact, while we're at this point, we may as well play it. But this, during that sequence, we get a complete like monologue out of Chuck Heston that I don't remember hearing before. And this is what he says, and it kind of sets him up for the dick he's going to be the rest of the movie. Anyway, here it is.
And that completes my final report until we reach touchdown. We're now on full automatic in the hands of the computers. I've tucked my crew in for the long sleep, and I'll be joining them soon. In less than an hour, we'll finish our 6 months out of Cape Kennedy. 6 months in deep space. By our time, that is. According to Dr. Haslein's theory of time in a vehicle traveling nearly the speed of light, the Earth has aged nearly 700 years since we left it. Well, we've aged hardly at all.
Okay.
Yeah. I love that part.
Blah, blah. And picture we're all on a ship. Ibbot's sleeping over there. Brian's sleeping over there with his hand down his pants. Brandy's sleeping on that other bunk. And I'm doing the final log, and here's what I do. The camera cuts to me as if I'm already finishing it. I say, and that concludes our final log entry. You know, let me go on for another 10 minutes so that I can build some exposition about this film people are about to see.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, while he's very wistful, he doesn't sound at all happy, you know?
Not in the least.
I've hung around with a lot of geeks, and you got to be a geek and a nerd to end up being in this kind of role.
Oh, yeah.
And I what Scott Johnson would be saying at that point. This concludes log entry. Everybody else is asleep. I'm about to put myself down. But first, I'm going to stick Dunaway's hand in warm water.
See you later, click. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
This concludes my final log.
Yes. For posterity, he'd do that. Yes.
Or posterity.
Yeah. What would you say?
I was finding it very interesting that in the future on the spaceship that he has a pack of cigarettes and is just a smoking away.
Oh, yeah. He's just chugging on that thing.
I guess they didn't think that would change.
Yeah. By the way, the girl who they found dead in the morning, because basically they're in cryogenic freeze or something for some period of time. And when they wake up, the thing has crashed, as Randy said, in Lake Powell, which is so beautiful. I can't wait to go down there again.
Well, and so obvious. That's what bugged me.
Oh, it's so obviously Lake Powell. Even if you don't live around here, that is so iconic.
Yeah.
Southern Utah, part of Colorado, part of Arizona. Anybody who lives anywhere near the western United States knows that's Lake Powell. It's beautiful, but, you know, it's not like this alien world. As soon as they landed, I'm like, oh, let's see, that's Glen Canyon. I think Bullfrog's right over there. I took a poo in that part of the lake, which is true.
You're not even an astronaut. I mean, you're not even somebody who has worked all of your young life to know everything there is to know about everything. Like it just blew my mind that And there's also a line he says pretty soon after they get out of the water where he says, forget about where, think about when. And I'm like, oh, so he knows he's on Earth, right?
Yeah,
just said, forget about where.
Yeah.
So he mm-hmm. he knows he's on Earth. No, then he spends the rest of the film acting like he doesn't know.
You bring up a good point, Randy. I wanted to make sure we got to this, too. The premise of the movie, this is not a spoiler alert, dude. The movie's 40 years old, 41 years old, 42 years old, whatever.
Not to mention, as my kid pointed out, I said, oh, did you see that ending coming? Because I watched this with my kids. And did you know how it was going to happen? Did you know it was going to be the Statue of Liberty again? Blew your mind, didn't it? He says, no, it was on the cover box on Netflix.
Well, that's a good point. But even when I was a kid and I saw this for the first time, I remember knowing in the first 10 minutes where they were. I remember just knowing it, not just because of Lake Powell. I just knew with all this talk about we don't know what planet we're on and we're 700 years later, and I just knew, okay, well, this is Earth. I mean, it was a concept that was really easy for me to grasp. I'm sure at the time, everybody's having a M. Night Shyamalan moment where they can't believe the twist at the end. But for me, I didn't get that at all.
I must be an old soul because I fell for it.
Did you?
I remember watching it the first time going, oh,
how'd they get that on that other planet is what you said.
Exactly.
I think I'd seen that scene so many times before I saw the movie, just because they use it in clips and they use it, you know, in the Oscars greatest moments and things like that. I didn't see Planet of the Apes until probably about maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago.
Wow. Really?
That sound about right.
I was pretty young when I first saw Planet of the Apes. My dad showed it to me.
Compare it to this time. Did you guys feel like we have a lot more to get to, but how did you feel it held up? Like, did you enjoy it more than you thought you would this time through? Were you watching it differently than you would have if it wasn't for Film Sack? Like, where did you land on it? I, for one, loved it. I had a great time.
Yeah, I loved it, too. And I picked up a lot more things than I did 20 years ago, a whole different set of subplots. It's funny when you think back at movies you saw when you were a kid, you tend to kind of think about the action. You tend to think about maybe the iconic scenes. But for this one, going back or seeing it again after so long, it's like, wow, there's a whole different side to this movie, a whole different subtext to this movie that I never even picked up on as a kid.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, I thought the guy with the brain operation that the monkeys performed and made him basically lobotomized or whatever they did. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was a shoe.
Shoe print?
Yeah, from a horse.
That's,
like a horse kicked him in the head.
That's where a monkey stepped on him.
I thought a horse kicked him in the head, and that was what messed him up. And then I saw it again, and I went, oh, there's the guy with the horseshoe head. And then I realized as an adult, I went, oh, but that would be a tiny little horse, like a little midget horse.
That's the one that chimpanzees ride on.
That's right. Exactly. So one interesting thing about this director, he went on to do what I think Randy said once was one of his favorite movies of all time. Randy, correct me if I'm wrong, but the very next year he directed and released Patton. Aren't you a Patton fan?
I am a Patton fan. I doubt I ever called it one of my favorites of all time.
I can't remember.
I think it's a good film.
Yeah, I can't remember. Something interesting. Like that. But nothing else that really like jumps out, like Lionheart. Remember that in the 80s? Did that?
Oh, yeah.
With Eric Stoltz, Gabriel Byrne, and other people that weren't very cool.
Right, and Sean Connery is the voice of the lion.
Yeah.
That's great.
So there's... Wait, he was the voice of the lion?
Really?
No, he wasn't. He was the dragon in that... Oh, hell, I don't know what the hell we're talking about. Anyway...
Dragonheart, yeah, exactly. Not Braveheart.
Now, supporting cast is basically a bunch of people that have never really done much since, except for the fact that it has Roddy McDowall in it, Kim Hunter in it. I mean, these are actors of yesteryear that no one today really knows about, but they were big deals at the time. And I remember when Roddy McDowall was in A Bug's Life before his death. I thought that was great.
Sad.
Yeah.
He forgot about that.
He played one of the ants that was always worried about the trail getting broken. Remember that? The trail has been broken. Anyway, you have to watch it.
Well, maybe that's on Netflix.
Yeah, it probably is, but not worth
being
on the show.
The Ant Bully is.
The Ant Bully is? We should do an animated film.
We haven't done one yet.
Like that really bad heavy metal movie.
Oh, but
a Film Sack animated film would be like The Aristocats or something like that.
Yeah, some old
I have that on Laserdisc.
Do you really?
No way.
Yeah.
Don't lie. You really do?
I do.
Do you play it still? Do you have a
totally.
Working Laserdisc?
Yeah.
Wow.
With composite outputs? That's great.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's right. How else am I supposed to watch my Beauty and the Beast work in progress?
Exactly, and that's the only way I can see the Star Wars digitally, that where Greedo shoots first.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Or no, I'm sorry, where Han shoots first.
I have that on tape, but yeah, same thing. I have a tape, by the way.
Laserdisc tape.
I have a copy.
What are you trying to do to me?
I have a copy of the original Star Wars trilogy that is a bootleg given to me by the son of the prison warden. I'm not kidding you. This kid, I still have the copies of the tapes, but it was in high school. This kid had gotten a hold of all this stuff. And, you know, back then, you either copied tapes or you bought tapes. And tapes were like $50 at the time. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So he got these, and we all knew him because he was the prison warden's son that was at the prison out in the Utah State Prison. So he'd come to school with all his, like, you know, swag from all his deviant deeds or whatever, and would give us all these tapes.
Nice.
And I remember thinking, he's going to go to prison, and his dad will be his warden.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, weird story that I probably shouldn't have told.
Probably get preferential treatment.
Could be.
But,
could
you
be.
Know, one of the last things about laser
no monkeys.
You what? What'd you say?
I said, hopefully there'll be no monkeys.
Oh, yeah.
but Ryan has something else.
I was just going to say one last thing about Laserdisc. There's nothing better than seeing Star Wars and having to get up four times through the movie to flip over the Laserdisc to continue the film.
Oh, my gosh. Is that what they – I never had a Laserdisc player. Is that what you had to do?
Yeah, the CAV man talking about some, you know. Whew,
that sounds terrible.
That was fun.
It's that part's there was horrible.
There were some players that were capable of playing both sides without having to eject it, but those are not more expensive.
There's something about the way Emmett said that part's horrible. It's like, what'd you like about Star Wars? I like the lightsaber fights. What did you hate about it? Getting up four times.
Getting up four times just really sucks.
I hated that. All right, so finally, the writers, by the way, Michael Wilson, don't know who he is. Rod Serling, I know who that is.
Yes.
That's cool.
That is Rod really Serling. Cool. I'd forgotten
those
about
who
that.
Don't know. Twilight Zone.
Yeah, for all those who had no idea who we're talking about, but he is the Twilight Zone dude. Lived to 1975, died of complications arising from coronary bypass.
Which was really weird.
Because he woke up in the hospital.
Yeah.
Because
and everybody had pig faces.
I love that episode.
Picture a man.
Picture a man who makes movies and writes scripts. Actually, that may be my Charlton Heston I'm doing.
I think that was, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so if you're a Rod Serling fan and you like you know, his writing, I think it's evident here. I feel like there's a lot of his influence in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Another
right. Here's another. I'll give you the best example of the Rod Serling influence on the film. It's also what I find to be the most difficult thing to accept about the film, and that is that it goes on and on and on before Taylor ever gets to speak to the apes by pure bad luck.
Yeah.
And it keeps getting compounded, you know, like first he's the only guy who possibly could speak to the apes because everybody who else who could just happens to die. And then, of course, he has a neck injury, which somehow affects his voice until the perfect time when he finally has to speak. There's really a whole section around him not being able to speak that's like the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. I actually kind of think there should have been a sequel that was all about Landon the Horseshoe Head guy, and it would just be like...
Oh, I'm sorry, that's not nice.
Unfortunately, stuff like that leads to plot holes, because you're saying, why does he keep trying to grab her pen and paper? He's got some straw right there in the cage with him. He could arrange that into words. Like,
But then Cornelius just come across and kick it up.
He could write on the wall with his
feet. Yeah, he could write with his feces.
Yeah, right. With his poo,
he could carve it out of the
crayon.
He could shave it out of his chest hair. He had a lot of that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty big plot hole that I'm expected to believe that he's going to just bide his time till he can get that pen and paper, right?
You know, oh man, feces would have been better. Like, my name is Taylor in poo. Oh,
he wouldn't have had enough room to write that.
True.
He would have written something like, "I'm out of paper." That's what he would have written.
Brilliant. Okay.
Gross. Or even Candyman. Remember that?
I was going to say he would have written Candyman. Yeah.
Candyman three times. All right. This is another nod to our weird luck with these movies. This is yet another Jerry Goldsmith score. Wrote the music for the movie. We've seen, I think we've seen 40% of film sack movies so far, like Jerry Goldsmith.
Yeah, he was always huge. So
he's prolific.
It was bound to happen. I don't know. Some of it was good. Some of it was bad. I was kind of mixed on that. What did you think, Randy? Since you're our resident,
I was miffed by the Discord, you know, like the there was an overabundance of discordant parts, and I didn't really need it. Like I could have taken your pretty typical stuff. I was expecting a little more of a Western vibe for some reason. I don't know. Maybe because the apes were on horses. I don't know. But instead, I got a lot more of a 60s haunted house film sort of score, and I think it was okay. I mean, it's the kind of film that I wish it somebody had gone back in time with like Danny Elfman and scored it.
Yeah,
and there's just that's the way it was. Yeah, it's a classic sound. So it was fair. I wouldn't mind at least that.
Wasn't a Casio. I mean, thank God.
Yeah, it wasn't electronic. Most of it. There was some of that, but didn't Danny Elfman do the remake? He did the remake music, and it was a decent score. Burton. Yeah, it was a pretty good score.
He had to. It was Tim Burton.
Yeah, that's right. That's their deal.
He is Tim Burton. You've never seen them together in the same place.
That's right. So I was going to make one other comment about the the discordant thing. Here's my impression of the music in this movie. Here we go. Gong gong.
Yes, there was a lot of that.
I mean, that was like,
and we were throwing up.
I don't understand that. There seems to be, that's a bit of a 70s thing, I think. That was a popular thing to do. It does say, some of this trivia I found, that Jerry Goldsmith supposedly, no proof of this, wore a gorilla mask while he wrote and conducted the score to get better in touch with the movie. I call bullcrap on that piece of trivia. I don't think he was doing that because
there would be evidence, because everybody who owned a camera, whoever saw him for those 2 weeks, would have been taking pictures of him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. And also to this day holds the record for the highest budget for makeup in a film ever. Adjusted for inflation, of course. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But still, but we've got to face it too. I mean, we can look at this and go, but it was pretty good for the time.
Yeah. It was 80 different makeup artists. Also the first female movie based on any kind of comic book from Marvel. Wait, that's not right.
What?
That's not right.
No. They did a comic
book. I'm sorry. They did a comic book based on the movie. I'm thinking of the movie for next week. Never mind. Ignore that.
Exactly.
There are no female gorillas or female orangutans in the movie. Interesting note. And the apes look
not
like...
not in the movie next week either.
No. Not a pun.
It's a good point. I kind of could say that about every movie from here on out.
Oh, good inside jokes for us.
Yeah, that works out great.
You'll just have to wait and see.
Let's play another clip, shall we? Oh, go ahead, Randy.
The thing that struck me about the makeup was that they extended well beyond what I expected. Like I knew that there were going to be, there was going to be a lot of clothing on the apes. So they were kind of, they only had to make up the tops of the hands and the faces and heads. But those makeup artists were working on all the humans, because every one of them had just spectacular dirty makeup and hair.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot that there was, that these were a bunch of professional actors who rode a cab over to the set today. And like they were, you know what I'm saying? The humans in the film were made up at just perfectly. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah. I thought, I kept trying to figure out how old Charlton Heston was in this movie, and he was in his like mid to late 40s.
Yeah.
And he looks so just thrashed. He just looks like this half sunburned, half not sweat. I could smell BO on the guy through the screen. I mean, just looked, he really did. He looked the part of this human thrown into this weird, you know, mix, even though they're in Sleestak caves and all that. It's still, you know, he still,
it was good.
You know, John Waters could have done a great Smell-O-Vision version of this film.
I forget about those.
Oh, yeah.
That's the truth.
The ape makeup, the facial stuff looked great until you had two apes kissing, and then it was just completely lost.
Pack, 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 pack.
Which was a shame.
Look, the thing is with that makeup, though, I mean, how do you guys feel like it held up? I felt like it was pretty good until people would start talking.
Exactly. It did pretty good. Some were better than others. Sometimes you could tell that they would have more difficulty. I'm sure you had to make huge, amazing gestures with your mouth to make that equipment work, because this isn't Jim Henson.
It's not even like Rick Baker. I mean, the thing is, I think Rick Baker, a guy like that, owes his career to inspiration from that movie. I think there's, you'd be hard pressed to find a makeup artist who didn't say or list Planet of the Apes as an inspiration for them. And he went on to do the remake, which you could argue was poo or good or whatever. But the makeup is amazing in the Tim Burton movie. And
oh, yes.
And you, but you still, you have to look back and go, dude, what came before, you know, was pretty amazing at the time. In 1968, it looked great. Yeah, it was all right. But when they talk, it's like, what are you doing with the humans? It's like, why is it this? It's Planet Halloween, everybody.
Just kidding. We're not apes at all.
Just rip them
off.
Welcome
back, Taylor.
Welcome back, you dummy.
Did you fall apart? For 2 years.
sorry about shooting you in the throat. It's all good. We're all friends here. All right, I got a clip called Prepare to Die. Mystery clip. Don't remember what it is. So, gonna play
prepare
it.
To die.
You're gonna play it now.
Very good.
You're 300 light years from your precious planet. Your loved ones are dead and forgotten for 20 centuries. 20 centuries! Even if you could get back, they'd think you were something that fell out of a tree.
Oh, Taylor, quit riding him.
There is just one reality left. We are here and it is now. You get hold of that and hang on to it, you might as well be dead.
I'm prepared to die.
He's prepared to die. Doesn't that make you misty?
Dude, what a bastard.
He's such a butthole.
He really was so a butthole. I never liked him at all. Okay, I'm going to say this is my biggest complaint about the movie, and it always has been. I don't think he's a likable character. I don't root for him. I'd rather see Shoehornhead guy do it, or the black guy that died too early, or somebody else, because he's not likable. And then the more I thought about it, I'm trying to pull a Chuck Heston movie, maybe Ben-Hur, but something out of the sky that I liked, where he was a likable character. And it could just be me. I'm admitting that. It may not be, you know, he may be everybody else's bee's knees, but I think he is patently dislikable in movies. I don't like him.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Which makes me like him. No, I agree. I think he plays a great kind of anti-hero. You know, he's such a cynic. And that's perfect. And that's kind of who he was in real life, too, as far as what I saw from his public life. Yeah. I don't know how cynically he is or whatever, because I never met the guy. But, yeah, I always felt like he was real
cynical. But he's supposed to be like a leading man. And back then, you know, especially in the Ben-Hur Ten Commandments days, that was supposed to mean the handsome, dashing guy you would totally root for. I can't root for the guy. He just makes me angry. Like
I wasn't rooting for the humans in the movie.
Who were you rooting for?
The apes.
The
chimpanzees.
Well, at least Cornelius and Zira, I think, are the...
That's who I was looking for.
The two, yeah, you're the two you're rooting for, because they're kind of, you know, caught between science and religion, basically, and trying
they
to make...
They were more human than the humans were.
I kind of agree. I kind of agree. Yeah. I totally agree. And I also think that nephew should die. But anyway, yes, Randy.
Oh, that
my entire theory about the film is that you have to look at it as being informed by the late 60s. You have to see it through the lens of the post-civil rights movement and center of the free love sort of hippie movement to really get why in the world things like Charlton Heston's character being a big jerk make sense. Because if he was really likable... If he was a really compelling, nice, wonderful guy, it would be a statement film. And they didn't want to make the statement that they were, you know, butting up against the whole film, which was that this organized religion was, you know, absolutely wrong and it was being used to do nefarious things. If you'd liked him enough, you would have been thinking about that. But instead, you were more thinking about this just general struggle.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing about the sort of hippie movement, if you will, I don't know what else to call it, is there's a lot of references in this film to people being hairy, dirty, smelly, stinky, all these things that are commonly associated with the, you know, with the free love generation who there were huge groups of people who purposely didn't bathe, who learned how to keep their hair in dreadlocks and this kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That, you know, hello? Did we lose him?
Statement movie.
Oh, he's back.
I don't think so. Who, me or Randy?
I don't know who was saying anything. But Randy makes a good point, and I think that what's interesting about this movie, and given the time frame, I think it's even more interesting. This movie has layers of messages. I think that is one of them. I think he's dead on about that. I think that's the chief one. I think that there are others, though. There's one as simple as we're treating monkeys, and if we flip this coin, it's look how terrible it would be to be treated that way by the monkeys. There's that simple message. There's other messages like, don't you know, don't
classism, racism.
Yeah, but even in the end, well, yeah, there's a whole racism and class system. But even at the end, there's this message about don't always expect that your bravado and you getting on the horse and riding off into the sunset is going to end well. That you're going to that you are going to find your ultimate goal, whatever that may be for Taylor, for George Taylor, and it ends up being something that completely, you know, rips his soul in half or whatever. And also, I still say that this is one of the bravest movies ever made, where I am sure the studio was like, you know, we could make it a little happier at the end. You know, we could have a, you know, it could be a popsicle salesman there or something.
Why,
you know?
Why are you doing your George Lucas voice right now?
I don't know. Maybe that's I'm channeling him for next week.
You'll save that for next week.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't flinch from that, and they didn't have music to go out on, and they ended those credits super fast, mainly because they rolled them all at the beginning. But but still, it was like this, ugh, done, finished. It reminded me of like Quarantine or
it did
a Tarantino movie or something. Like, it's like, whoa, dude. That, and for the time, again, that just felt really avant-garde and pushing the rules and making the studios nervous. And I like that. I respect that.
And the studios were nervous about this film. Well, they were afraid that this film was going to come off very cheesy.
And if they had anything to be nervous about, it was the very anti-conservative overtones, like the anti-religious, or pro animal rights movement message. Like there was a lot to be concerned about. It's a real miracle that we got the film we got. That they didn't go try to fix it somehow.
Yep, I agree. Totally agree. Got another clip to play about the angry veterinarian. I don't even remember why I captured this, but he wasn't in there very long.
Because he was angry acting.
Yeah, he was. That's right. There was some angry acting. So here it is.
And they carry communicable diseases. Why aren't they cleaned up before they're brought here?
You don't sound happy in your work.
Little more than a vet in this laboratory. You promised to speak to Dr. Zayas about me.
I did. You know how he looks down his nose at chimpanzees.
But you made it. Why can't I?
What do you mean, made it? I'm an animal psychologist, that's all. We have no authority.
All right. I like that conversation because it sets up some of those messages.
Yeah. That's great acting, even if you didn't have a monkey suit on.
Oh, Kim Hunter's awesome, dude.
I mean, she just nailed that.
She nailed it. And I was looking at some pictures of her. She died in 2002, not too long ago. Born in 22, so she was old.
I'm just cracking up because of the reversal with the humans in the cages, and I'm like, there's a guy standing over in a cage, and he's reaching out because you gave him some sugar, and he just wants some more sugar. Why don't you just give him some more sugar?
He's a good actor, too. Yeah. Never called his name, but
good.
Very good actor.
Yeah. Didn't have the horseshoe in his head, though.
He was totally buying in on it. Want more sugar cubes?
Okay, your focus is for this scene. You're gonna want sugar.
Brilliant!
I really want the sugar. Come on,
he's a method actor.
Yeah,
I didn't like the whole doc. Oh, it's kind of hard to explain. But did you notice I'm watching the Dr. Zayas bits because as a kid, it seemed like he turned in the movie.
I thought it was too, because I kept thinking, man, it must be late in like maybe a later one or something.
Maybe, but because it seemed like he'd flipped to the other side at some point, I thought.
Yeah.
But he never really did in this. But did you guys see the part where him and the two other orangutans, who seem to be in charge of everything, are doing the hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil?
Oh, that was so obvious.
One of the best sight gags. And it's almost like they want to make sure that you got it. You know, it's like, well, don't do it too quickly. Come on, slowly, and then let's focus on it again. And hey, let's go back and look at it a third time.
Yeah.
I pointed out to Tina, and then I realized, they pretty much show this for 5 minutes. I think she would have figured.
She would have got it. That's
totally
what I did too.
Forgotten.
She's saying, "Look, they're still doing it.
Yeah, they're still there. They want to make sure the audience gets it. But I don't remember it when I was younger. This time is the first time I noticed it. So I must have been daft back then when I thought the message was, fight the monkeys. That was that was the only message I had.
Well, I didn't even know they were on Earth. Apparently, I was the only person who didn't know. I was the only one not letting the secret that they were on Earth.
Well, Brian Dunaway, did you know that ape came from man?
Or
monkeys
was it man
are made
came
out
from
of
ape?
People?
Well, then this clip is for you because it teaches you all you need to know.
Zira, do you want to get my head chopped off?
Don't be foolish. If it's true, they'll have to accept it. Cornelius has developed the most brilliant hypothesis.
But I'm probably wrong.
That the ape evolved from a lower order primate, possibly man. In his trip to the Forbidden Zone, he discovered traces of a culture older than recorded time.
The evidence was very meager.
You didn't think so then?
That was before Dr. Zayas and half of the Academy said that my idea was heresy.
I just like those guys. I could listen to them talk all day.
I do too.
They were already bickering. They weren't even a true couple yet, right? Weren't they?
I would really like them to do some coverage for the Winter Olympics. Like, I could just watch them talk and listen to them argue about figure skating.
Yeah. Oh, no. He just biffed his triple sal cow.
I don't believe he tried hard enough. Oh, silly. You didn't think so before. That's what's great. Is he was so, like, he had found this great hypothesis in the history of apedom.
Mm-hmm.
And he still just thought he was a piece of crap and nobody would believe him. I liked it. Yep. I liked it a lot. Roddy McDowall for the win, as far as I'm concerned. I thought he was great in this movie.
Totally.
Damn dirty ape. Can't do a film sack about this movie without it. So here it is.
Security police.
I'm in charge of this man.
No longer, madam. He is now in the custody of the Ministry of Science.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
It's still, I don't care how many times you hear it.
It's still cheesy and terrible? Is that what you're going to say? Because I think
it
is.
Wait. Let's test Brian Dunaway's theory and play it again.
All right.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
Yep. It works. It works again.
It keeps working. It keeps on giving. I mean, it's iconic as hell.
It is.
But
and
it's,
that's probably
it's
why just, most people would hate it today. But,
that's why, isn't that why it's iconic? Is because it's totally over the top and ridiculous. I mean, that's not for any other reason. There's no real statement there. It's not like people are going, oh my gosh, that says it all. What they're saying is
such a buildup too. I mean, because we hadn't heard him talk. I know it's a plot hole. I know you have to suspend your belief a lot, but you know, because the guy hasn't talked for, I don't know, like a month or something. And all of a sudden that's what he blurts out. And it's just like, I don't know. It's real powerful because you've been waiting for him to say something, and he finally gets it out. And
according to production notes, he was suffering from a really bad chest flu at the time of filming most of the movie, and instead of wait it out and film later, the filmmaker said, we'd like to just keep going because we think that's it makes you sound gruffer and cooler.
Yeah,
and so he did. He claims that he thought he was actually going to die when they were shooting him with water. Like when they were using the hoses on him, he thought he was gonna
get that damn dirty director over here.
I don't want to do this damn dirty movie anymore. I'm going to my damn dirty trailer. Good stuff. Okay, now lately in movies we seem to be getting scenes that aren't intended to be super sexual but end up being really uncomfortably so.
Yeah.
And this is a great example of it. Him in the cage talking to his mute chick.
Oh, there were women, lots of women, lots of love making, but no love. That was the kind of world we'd made. So I left, because there was no one to hold me there. Did I tell you about Stuart? And there was a lovely girl. The most precious cargo we brought along. She was to be the new Eve. With our hot and eager help, of course.
I am so glad you captured that, because that was like, wow, how many politically incorrect things can he fit into one sentence?
Hot and eager help. And what is that exactly?
And then you lay over that the whole specter of him. He's basically, you know, making the moves on an animal. Like, it's just, oh.
Yeah, it's weird.
He's got no intelligence. Yeah. But you gotta admit that sums up the whole movie there. I mean, Charlton Heston doesn't really need anybody else to be in the movie. I mean, he could just do it all by himself. I mean, he's there, and that's basically what his character does. He doesn't talk to people. He talks at them.
Or around them, or like they're all revolving around him to hear what he's saying at all times. And I don't like that. I like that the work is hot and dirty or whatever he said. But I think that's funny. But I think what he's saying or what
of love making.
But then, and you know, and he says he left the planet because there was no one for him there.
Yeah.
Oh, aside from the years of, you know, military training and freaking astronaut stuff and everything else. But it makes it sound like he was just, I'm lonely. I think I'll go into space with token black man and this other guy.
Sign me up.
There's no one for me to hold. Anyway.
Step for Stuart.
Is anyone counting?
I want to keep. Her body's probably softened up a little bit in the water. We can go fish around.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Stuart, if I'd only shut her thing properly, she wouldn't have been the crypt keeper when we woke up. She moved her arms, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that.
Have you noticed, really?
Yeah. She was holding her arms like flat or on her chest when they opened it, yeah, and they all flipped out. And
is that like standard cryogenic form anyway?
Yeah.
To cross your arms like you're dead.
Like if you're going to die or if you're getting cryogenically frozen because you never know if you're going to die.
Yeah.
They put you in the death position. But then as soon as the ship starts going down, her arm's at her side. And I kept thinking, no, she's okay. She's alive. Go get her.
don't leave her there.
No, we've got to somehow escape and leave her here.
I'd like to point out that our Charlton Heston impersonation sounds, every one of us sounds more like Phil Hartman.
I was going to say Zap Brannigan is it's almost like.
Yeah, Zap Brannigan, he's basically that archetype anyway.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, which is great. So thank you, Chuck Heston.
In the first season of Futurama, I think it was Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman, yeah, I think mm-hmm. so.
Well, I don't think it was. I think he was supposed to, didn't they? I think they aired right after they started doing voice right after he died, but that was supposed to be his role. I think that's what it was.
Oh, maybe that's
I have to look it up. But I remember there was this big deal about he was going to go on the show, and then he didn't, and then they just went ahead and had what's-his-name do it.
I'm Troy McClure.
Oh, dude, I hate that Phil Hartman's dead. Do you know how many cool things we'd have had by now?
That kills me.
Yeah.
Sitcoms, movies. Ugh. Pisses me off. Anyway. All right. Moving on. Got one more clip
Carrot
to play.
Carrot Top is still alive.
That's right.
I know. Here's the justice. Damn you.
Gallagher should be dead. No more Gallagher. All right. Nobody take that as a terrible
thing. How
many
times did we say damn you this episode? I want to know that also.
Damn it, Brian. Counting. If you're not counting, I don't know. I remember.
Now, how come none of the four of us have brought up the scene? You know, we talked a little bit about the swimming hole scene, but at the very end of their swimming, they come out onto the shore and notice a footprint. All three of them completely buck naked. Yeah. Butt naked? Yeah. Buck naked.
Yep.
Buck naked.
And then the bucka, where they start going.
Exactly. Yeah. They're all standing up naked with Charlton Heston in the middle and the two guys on either side of him. And then the two guys squat down out of camera, out of screen level.
Yeah. And it's not even sexual. What it is uncomfortable. All I can think of is, it's like you guys are checking this foot out. Do you notice that there's a man's unit hanging 2 inches from your face?
Exactly.
And not even that. It's a big old sunburned, nasty, freaking disgusting Charlton Heston wiener. I don't know, man.
Well, and then he starts slowly declining and the camera goes with him. Like so that it's always keeping his waist, what's below his waist, out of frame.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's just so creepy.
Some weird choices there. Weird choices, I thought.
It's a very uncomfortably filmed scene.
I didn't like it.
That's the same thing I told you.
Okay, now
we talked.
We talked about Horseshoe Head, and I have a clip regarding Horseshoe Head. Specifically, is the word I'm looking for.
Persephone,
and it's also a great line from Heston that not too many people repeat all the time. But here it is.
You cut up his brain, you bloody baboon! Cut it.
That is awesome.
You cut up his brain.
You bloody baboon.
Yeah, good times. Love it.
Actually, I'm a chimpanzee, but thanks.
So my understanding is the way that class system works is if you're a orangutan, you're old and you totter around and you run the government. If you are a gorilla, you're the military and the tough guys on horses. And if you're a chimp, you are what?
Smart.
What are you?
Intelligent.
Is that what it is? Just intelligent? Because the orangutans are pretty smart.
Yeah, the chimps were both, you know, used for the intelligent jobs and the non-intelligent because, you know, you heard them talking in the clip we played before about how Dr. Zaius wouldn't even address this guy because he was a chimp or maybe I'm reading the clip wrong, but
they had other jobs and stuff, but I remember there being, like in the new, the Tim Burton one, it seemed like they flipped that around a little bit, so like there was no Dr. Zaius type character, but mm-hmm. the orangutan mm-hmm. was the Paul Giamatti character who was kind of a buffoon.
Yes.
I think that was Paul Giamatti, right?
Yes, it was. It was.
Yeah, he did Monkey in the Water later. Just kidding.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so there's that. Let's talk about, let's do our film sack checklist. I enjoy this.
Fair
this,
part.
This we'll is where it. We sort of check against this list to see if some of these stereotypic things happen in this film, like they do in most. Did anyone barf? No.
Mm, nope.
Not that I recall.
Okay, nobody barfed. Booby, nope, but lots of man bum and a little bit of man wiener if you squinted hard enough. But no boobies.
Yeah, I was convinced that I saw some boobs. I'm like really good at spotting boobs. When
I was really
by.
Looking hard.
Yeah.
There's a spot where they threw some women into a trailer cage.
Yeah.
And I think there might have been a little pause.
I know
boobage,
the part you're talking about. I saw that.
Holy crap! But I'm not looking close enough, I guess.
I don't consider pause boobage to be real
count.
Boobage.
It okay. It's also creepy when people pause and look. stereotypes: gorillas are aggressive, orangutans are smart, chimps are annoying. Basically,
totally.
Those are their stereotypes. Yeah. But they, I mean,
oh, so this is. So this is just like the Star Trek uniforms, right? Like command
and red shirt. Yeah,
exactly. That's a good point. Black guy dies first. This is a new addition to the list. Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, unless you count the woman, but yeah, okay.
Well, that's true. But yeah. They didn't even give a chance. She didn't get to talk.
No, she exactly. She probably feels pretty cheated.
I know it. So what's my part again? You just kind of lay it there.
I like to think she was dead before he shut the thing on her. That's what I think of. She choked on some meat. Nobody noticed. She's dead.
It was kind of depressing when you first saw them out on the lakeside and you realized, oh, look, Token Black. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I thought he was.
What was this movie made again? Uh-oh.
68. Oh, we're in trouble. Decapitation. I don't think so. I didn't see one.
No.
Wasn't there an attempted one? I don't remember.
They had talked about it.
Hmm. Yeah, they may have talked about it. Wilhelm Scream. I think there were a few.
Yes.
That's an addition to the thing now. Wilhelm Screams. I got to start capturing those. I forgot to.
Did they play those through a monkey mask at any time, or was that just a human screaming?
Where they do the Wilhelm from a monkey?
Like, there was a Wilhelm Scream one time when he like pushes an ape and it falls off a little ledge or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there was definitely an ape did a Wilhelm.
Good.
Have we talked about Wilhelm Screams number four? So
first
if you're
time.
Not familiar with that, Google it.
Google it.
I'll find one and play it here.
Wikipedia. Yeah.
Note to self. Put a file in here. Somebody peeing. No, but I assume they do.
Yeah.
I just got the feeling that they all peed somewhere. And let's see.
It probably while
they had the cages had those nice little cutout troughs that.
Yeah, those were nice.
All went into the central drain. So yeah, there was definitely some peeing going on. We just didn't see it.
Them's are like toilets.
I thought that was like a drinking water system. Man, that's
boy, you would be
bad
in trouble.
Instincts.
Boy, exactly. You better get that cleared up before the apes take over.
You're over there drinking it, and the guy in the next cage is using it. Oh.
Well, one of us is wrong.
Well, that's a situation where none of us is right.
Yeah. Yes. I could sure use some sugar. All right. Bad guy with a theme song or sound? No. Not really. Mm-hmm. The whole movie kind of had that discordant, retarded stupidness, but other than that. Kenobi type Zaius, but not really. Could have been. I thought he was going into this, but he wasn't. So not really a Kenobi type. I think Kenobi types happened in 76, and then from then on we had Kenobi types.
Mm.
Animal or robot as comedy relief? Yes, Cornelius and the chick.
Totally.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
and they're animals.
The nephew, yeah.
Well, yeah. The nephew I have down is kid named Billy, Bobby, or Buddy, or as it turns out, Lucius.
Lucius.
He bugged the crap out of me. I hated that character.
Yes. Oh yeah, he's the most the voice acting was just atrocious.
Yeah,
Brian Ibbett. Do I even have to ask the last one, because we all know the answer? Cave that looked like a vagina. The whole movie looked like a vagina.
Yeah, I had a very weird.
There was actually vaginas in this movie.
I think I noticed my first rock formation that looked like a vagina during the crash scene at the very beginning.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lake Powell is a giant showcase of rock-shaped vaginas. Oh, wait, that's not right.
We've been by here before, haven't we?
Sorry, vagina-shaped rocks. I did it backwards.
I think I've seen that.
If you got a rock-shaped vagina, you're in trouble. All right. Moving
and you
on.
Know what? Another one we should actually add to the list. I just thought of this is remake. Or is that already on the list?
It should be. Yeah, we've had a lot of those.
This being a
remake,
or there's
right, modern
remakes.
Modern remakes.
If there's a modern remake, and obviously there's the Tim Burton one that we brought up earlier, but
even that's old,
and that's almost 10 years old. But there was also talk of a prequel being made.
Always a good idea.
Yes, they would have actually talked about the ape uprising. Would have had the first intelligent chimpanzee, and basically a remake of conquest of the Planet of the Apes, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's still in talks, still in, you know, early development, but is supposedly still moving forward.
I would see it. I would wonder, I don't remember Conquest, so I can't say if this had this in there, but are you going to have a human as your yeah. protagonist, or are you just going to have an ape as your protagonist? That would be an interesting... I mean, they rise yeah. up against humans, so the humans are the bad guys, right? I mean, that's the
right,
idea.
Right, presumably, yeah. yeah.
I'd yeah. see that. I'd watch that.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds great.
I've seen Conquest. Conquest was, you know.
It was okay.
I love all the Planet of the Apes movies, so I'm kind of biased.
What's right. the one where they get the big nuclear bomb underground?
Beneath.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it? Be?
Yeah. Well, I guess that would. It was underneath. I can't remember the name of it, but it was underneath.
Beneath something.
What was it?
That's the second one, right? Isn't that the
yeah,
second
we,
one? Yeah,
I
that's,
that was the second
that's the one,
one
I saw. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And even the ending, which didn't end well for anyone, was still felt like this forced, horrible. It was horrible.
Mm.
I don't yeah. recommend it. I do want to see 3, 4, and 5, though.
Yeah.
Whatever those are. And I guess Cornelius is...
Maybe we can make this our first franchise.
Yeah, we should see. We should see more of these. I don't. I say yeah. we skip 2. Skip was 2 is. But I hear the one where they have the battle of the Planet of the Apes or whatever mm-hmm. it is. That's supposed to be really. Oh, that's yeah. supposed to be fun.
Yeah,
and that was like 76 or 5 or something. So I don't know what that means. Not that that should matter, because that was still pre Star Wars. Okay, I would like to know if you guys could sum up your feelings about this movie in a Twitter post or maybe a Google Buzz post, which gives you more characters.
Ooh, look at that.
How would you
Buzz,
do it?
That's too many characters. I can't do it.
You can't do it.
I'll go first.
All right, Randy, go.
Planet of the Apes. So good, even Marky Mark could do it.
Oh, that was good.
That's great.
That was awesome.
You got that good vibration. Remember that song?
Have you been...
I remember it. Anyway, yes, nice. Brian, yes. Yes.
Okay, Twitter post,
yeah, it,
less than so many characters. Okay, get your dirty dang dude. No, that was the beginning
that was
part.
Your intro.
Planet of the Apes, you finally did it!
was that you hitting the sand?
Yeah, I hit the sand.
Wow.
You finally did it, yep.
Sound effects and everything, that was brilliant. And Brian Nibbett.
Well, I kind of used a little bit of this earlier, but I got to use it again. Apes came from people.
Apes are made of people.
Apes are made of people.
Brilliant. We have, what do we have here? We have Scott Fletcher doing his best to sum it up with a quote from the film. Here it is.
You maniacs, you blew it up. Aw, damn you. God damn you all to hell.
Wow.
That was incredible. Yeah. I'm glad you played that last because I couldn't have followed that.
Yeah. No, that was brilliant. I thought you did a really good job. If I was to tell people what we learned while they were asleep, those beds aren't claustrophobic at all. Yeah. Fake storms are cheaper than real storms. The ship is full
totally.
Of beards. What happened to the chick? Random boulders will fall, mark my words.
They chase you. They were very aggressive boulders.
Monkeys taking pictures made Chuck faint. Rubber mask kissing is gross. It's a madhouse. A madhouse! That's what I learned while I was stepped away from the film. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Of course, we are talking about Planet of the Apes, 1968's classic. I recommend people see it. Are we all in agreement? People should watch this if they have never seen
definitely.
It.
Oh, it's a classic. It, yes. And it's, you know, as much as we poke fun over the last 45 minutes or whatever, it is a classic, and it's one that you have to see as a sci-fi fan.
I agree.
Without a doubt.
100%. If you want to follow along with the show notes for this episode and all our episodes, visit us at filmsack.com. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmsack. Send us your film recommendations and your thoughts and feedback to filmsack@gmail.com. That's going to do it for us. Next week's movie is Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck.
That's right. Howard the Duck. A thrilling classic in its own right. Or not. We'll see when we get there. But that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for me, for Brian, for Randy, and for Mr. Charlton Heston himself. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye. Machacha.
I remember Peskin Las Nalgas, which I think was wash your testicles.
Oh.
Or something.
Isn't it great? Nice. The first thing you learn in any new language is how to talk dirty.
Oh, it. Yeah. When my brother came to America, dude, it's the first Korean words I ever learned.
Comes mi pantalones pequeños.
Yeah. Which is small penis in your pants.
That's like eat my shorts.
Oh, I wasn't quite there. I Google translated it.
Did you? Oh, that'd be too funny.
Yeah, my brother taught us what burachas were, which are boobs.
That's what I was about to say. Are those boobs? Yeah. It sounds like boobs.
And then he taught us bongu, which is fart.
Oh, really? And I was going to think that was a butthole. But
no.
It totally sounds like bongu. Yeah. Stick that up your bongu.
He would always say it at dinner. He'd go, oh, and this is before he knew English very well. He'd go, oh, bongu, bongu, bongu. And then he'd get up and run in the other room and fart.
Buchachos. Or what would you say the boobs were?
But it's not actually what I said, but I prefer buchachos, if you want my honest opinion. That's brilliant.
I get that after I eat tacos.